began to lose control. I began to lose control. I didn't mean to hurt you. I'm sorry that I made you cry. Oh no, I didn't want to hurt you. I'm just a jealous guy.
I shared part of this story last week, but I want to share a little bit more of it and give you the more dramatic version of it. I had a wonderful opportunity in my life to pursue a doctorate, a PhD in religious studies. Just prior to that, I was pastor at the United Methodist Church in Roseau, Minnesota, and I was enjoying my work there. And at the same time, I felt there was still something I wanted to accomplish educationally, and so I applied to some schools. I was accepted into the PhD program at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. And then I thought when I completed that program, I would see if I might pursue teaching in a college or a seminary. So we moved from Roseau to Dallas. We moved ourselves. It was the first time I'd ever driven a U-Haul truck and a stick shift. But that's another story. It's kind of an interesting one, but another story for another time. We met a lot of wonderful people in Dallas. I met some great people in the program that I was in. One of them with whom I worked quite a bit was a student who came from Nigeria. He also, like me, worked in the area of religious ethics. We studied together. We did some independent study classes together. I appreciated him a lot. As the time for graduation came, Simeon, that was his name, Simeon secured a tenure-track position at Wake Forest University. And when there were no teaching jobs on the horizon for me, I asked the bishop here in Minnesota about the possibility of being appointed as a pastor. And I did get an appointment. I was appointed as a part of a pastoral team for 7 congregations, many of them small, on the Iron Range in Minnesota. So just kind of picture that, tenure track, Wake Forest, 7 small churches in northern Minnesota. And when Simeon congratulated me, I was gracious on the outside, but to be honest, felt a little less pleasant inside. I was genuinely happy for him, and I was genuinely envious of him. I was a jealous guy. And it probably didn't help when a few months later, he told me that he shared his first Thanksgiving with Maya Angelou at Wake Forest. So what is that story, which is not a story I feel terribly good about in many ways, and that song, John Lennon's Jealous Guy, what does that have to do with this wonderful, rich, multi-textured story that Anne read, the story that we sometimes call the prodigal son or the story of the loving father? It's such a tender and joyous and wonderful and rich story, but I want to dig into it just a little bit more deeply. When you hear that story, don't you want to be like the father in the story? Loving and forgiving and generous and kind. You just want to be that person. And that's what we want God to be like. And frankly, that's exactly the kind of thing Jesus is hinting at in the story, that God is a lot like that Father. And we also may know a little bit what it's like to be that younger son. There may be times when we've made some bad decisions, when we've wandered off, when we've lost our way a little bit, when things aren't going so well in our lives, and some of it is because we've made some lousy decisions. I think of the part of that hymn, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. And while we don't want to emulate the younger son, we may know what his experience is like. We may have been in that place, and we hope that there is for us some kind of wonderful, joyous, welcoming home awaiting us if we've wandered off. But then there is a third important character in the story, the older son, the one who never left home, the one who day after day after day worked faithfully for and with his father. No one wants to be like him. In any way, no one wants to be like him. We don't want to recognize ourselves in him, though if we're honest, sometimes we do. He was a jealous guy, and in an ugly way. His brother returns, there's a grand party, and he's angry and refuses to join the celebration, even when his father comes and pleads to him. I love that. I hadn't really paid much attention to that line before, but the father comes in and pleads with him to join the party. He refuses. Listen, for all these years I have been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command, yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, that rings so true, doesn't it? You know, if you're married and you've had a child maybe misbehave, you know that son of yours or daughter of yours? Well, this time it's a son to his father. That son of yours who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him. Can you imagine how much those words hurt? And when you see the character of the father, do you really think he treated that son like a slave? You know, in many ways, that ugly, ugly character of the third, that the older brother, is the crucial character in the story. Not the nicest character, but the critical character in the story. Because Jesus is telling this story in response to people who are saying to him, look at the rabble you hang out with. Look at the people you're inviting to dinner. And then Jesus tells this story. Tells a story, and this older brother is a jealous guy. Now, maybe the better or more proper word is that he was an envious guy, but I don't know anybody who sang a song called Envious Guy, so jealous worked out much better. Some suggest envy is the better term here, feeling bad about when good things happen to others, wishing it might be you instead of the other person who is receiving that good thing. And I don't really want to quibble with the words. That's a whole other discussion. Be fun to have some time. I'm using those terms interchangeably, envious or jealous. Whatever you call it, I think a writer named Joseph Epstein has it right when he says, of the seven deadly sins, only envy is no fun at all. I like that. Lust, gluttony, you know. But envy is no fun at all. Epstein wrote a book. The New York Public Library had a series of lectures on the seven deadly sins, which they then published in these very short books. Joseph Epstein wrote the book on envy. And he goes on to say this, little is good about envy except shaking it off, which, as any of us who have felt it deeply knows, is not so easily done. Isn't that true? We know envy is no fun, but we feel it, and it's not easy to let go of. The German philosopher Schopenhauer, to be honest, Schopenhauer is not known as a really fun guy, wrote this, because they feel unhappy, men cannot bear the sight of someone they think is happy. A human being at the sight of another's pleasure or possessions would feel his own deficiency with more bitterness. Is that who we are? Now, I think Schopenhauer, for the most part, was a really very, very unhappy person and couldn't really stand the idea of somebody else enjoying life because he didn't. But we may be just a little bit like him in some ways. Envy or jealousy is a little bit like disappointment. Last week we talked about disappointment, and I talked about it as a mirror emotion. But unlike disappointment, what envy mirrors tends to be kind of ugly. Disappointment, I said, mirrors the idea that we care about things, that we dream, that we take some risks, good things. Envy, at its very most, hints at aspirations in our lives, but only from a sideways glance. When we experience jealousy over the good fortunes of others, frankly, what's often mirrored is our own unhappiness, some of our own shortcomings in our ability to empathize with others. There's this wonderful German word, and I'm sorry for making so many German references this morning, but there's this wonderful German word, Schadenfreude. It means taking delight in the misfortune of others. It's a kind of jealousy. We envy someone, and then sometimes they're kind of pleased when things don't go well for them. How often there are delightful stories about, oh, look how the mighty have fallen. And sometimes that says something about our ability to be envious. You know, they've done studies that say, that have concluded that most people would agree to earn less money so long as they were making more than their neighbors. Isn't that fascinating? What an interesting look into human beings. You would be content with making less as long as you were making more than the people who lived around you. And think about the role of envy in our culture. Joseph Epstein, I think, suggests insightfully that the entire advertising industry can be viewed as little more than a vast, intricate, envy-creating machine. Envy's all over the place. So I think when we feel that feeling, and we do sometimes, those feelings of envy and jealousy, we need to ask what's going on in my own heart. When I feel it, I need to ask, what's going on in my own heart, my own soul, my own mind? And then I need to find some healing. Because envy really is no fun at all. I think the best we can do with it is be self-aware and find ways to grow beyond envy. And let me offer just two suggestions for jousting with jealousy. Another German philosopher nobody thought was really a barrel of fun either, Immanuel Kant, at least had an insight better than Schopenhauer's. He thought that envy is a part of a human experience and one of its opposites is gratitude. Gratitude. Anne Lamott, I think, writes really well about gratitude. Gratitude, she says, begins in our hearts and then dovetails into behavior. It almost always makes you willing to be of service, which is where the joy resides. It means you're willing to stop being such a jerk. I like Anne Lamott. When you are aware of all that has been given you in your lifetime and in the past few days, it is hard not to be humbled and pleased to give back. When we go from rashy and clenched to grateful, we sometimes get to note the experience of grace in knowing that we could not have gotten ourselves from where we were stuck in hate or self-righteousness or self-loathing, which are the same thing, to freedom. The older son suddenly loses his ability to see what he had to be grateful for. He was blinded by jealousy. You know, sometimes jealousy is called the green-eyed monster. I kind of like that image. Because when we're jealous, we can't see worth beans. We can't see truthfully. The older son, if you kind of get the character of the father in the story, had a pretty wonderful father. I can't imagine him not being generous to this faithful son. And somehow the son just lost sight of that completely. And then there's a party happening. And the older son seemed to be missing that too. A second way to grow beyond envy or jealousy is to remember the words of the Serenity Prayer and the wisdom that is contained in it. God, grant me the grace to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, the courage to change the things which should be changed, and the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other. I know there are some slightly different versions. That's my favorite. Some things just can't be changed. And that includes the past. We can't change it. We can understand it better. We can relate to it in the present in more healthful ways, but we can't change it. And somehow the older son just doesn't understand that in the story. Had his brother squandered his own inheritance? Yeah. Had he engaged in dissolute living? Leaves a lot to the imagination, doesn't it? Yes, he did. And he can't go back and change that. Nothing can change what's happened. But how do you move forward? You can be angry and bitter and envious, or you can try to let go of that and find some new life. You can't change the past, but you can be something different in the present, and you can try to be wise. Joseph Epstein argues that the feeling of envy isn't likely to increase one's capacity for happiness. I like that. Envy is not likely to increase one's capacity for happiness. Whatever else it is, he says, envy is above all a great waste of mental energy. Theologically speaking, I think envy, jealousy are roadblocks to grace. They shut us off from grace. It's not that the grace isn't there, but we hold it at arm's length. Envy narrows our vision. It constricts our hearts. These past 4 years, I've served on a denominational committee, and one of the other people on this denominational committee is a professor at Wake Forest University. His name is Tom. And a couple meetings into our conversation, I asked Tom if he knew my friend Simeon. And he did, and he said Simeon is still there at Wake Forest University. And I asked Tom if he thought of it to please say hello to Simeon from me. I hope he's had a good life. I hope he's enjoyed his teaching. I hope he's known wonderful moments. Because frankly, in the 22 years since we last saw each other, I've known some extraordinary moments of grace. I've met delightful people, many of whom I'm looking at here. And I like my life. And that's sort of the thing with God and with God's grace. See, with God's grace, there's always some kind of party going on, or should be. Always some kind of party going on, and the only thing envy does is keep us on the outside looking in. And wouldn't you rather just let it go and go in and enjoy some food and music and dancing? I mean, in the end, isn't that what we want? Amen.